Balsharash, a very good morning. You're welcome back to the Tommy Maron Show. It's Michael D in for Tommy this week. And now it's time for a very special programme.
Ours to Protect on Midwest Radio, funded by the Commission Naman with the television licence fee as part of the Sound and Vision Scheme.
Well, this morning marks the beginning of a brand new segment here on Midwest Radio called Ours to Protect. The series will raise awareness regarding various environmental topics and what we can do to help and get involved. Midwest Radio, along with 22 other local and regional radio stations, have joined together as part of this project. And the opening panel discussion is taking place this morning here on Midwest. It's funded by the Commission Naman with the television licence fee as part of the Sound and Vision Scheme. And I'm delighted to say we are joined in the studio. We have a number of guests to go through what we have planned to talk about here on the programme. We have Professor Kevin Lynch from the University of Galway to discuss coastal resilience. We have Conan Kilcoyne to discuss the decarbonising project in Mulranny. Derek McLaughlin to discuss the Wild Atlantic Nature Project. And we're also joined by Laura Dixon, who is the Acting Climate Activities Coordinator with Mayo County Council. You're all very welcome into studio. Great to have you with us. We'll be chatting to you all in due course. We'll begin with yourself, first of all. Laura, great to have you with us, and this is an exciting new collaboration. You know, there's so much negativity sometimes with regards to it, Ireland on course to miss its 2030 climate targets and all of this unless we do drastic changes. We're going to focus really on the positives, and there are so many positives we should hear about in a few moments, and that is the main objective here and the main key, because there's some great work being done right across the region.
Yeah, there really is, Michael D. So yeah, I am delighted that Midwest are taking on this programme and doing ours to protect. It is depressing at times, like even this morning driving up in the car to hear that Ireland's officially in drought and that there could be a fodder crisis and listening to what's happening with their oceans as well. But it's also really exciting to think about and to know, and I guess I am in the lucky position that I do have an understanding and a good knowledge of all the really exciting and positive stories and projects that are being undertaken around Mayo. So I guess from a local authority level, we are doing a local authority climate action plan, and that will cover all of Mayo. So looking at the risk assessment and how we will be impacted by climate, and also looking at our emissions. But this is kind of the opportunity for the local authority, together with all the people of Mayo, to kind of co-design a climate action plan for Mayo so that we can reach the 2030 targets. And I really do want people, and we want people to be part of that. But we are, even when I talk to colleagues throughout the rest of Ireland, we're in a really lucky position that we have the likes of the Wild Atlantic Nature Project, that we have the coastal resilience and the projects that are there, but also that we have really committed communities. And Mulranny here is a good example of it. Mm-hmm. So Mulranny is our decarbonising zone, but we also have a whole network of communities that are really taking on some really innovative and exciting projects. So we have the likes of a solar mehel, we have work with, like, say, what's happening in Tourmacady. There's loads of energy projects happening there. There's an EU-funded project in one of our communities about efficient renovations. So there really is so many great projects, and I hope throughout Hours to Protect and the weekly series that you have, you'll be talking, and I know you will be talking to a lot of the community groups to learn what is happening and also how people, the general public, can participate.
I know you've rolled out a number of projects in recent times. You highlighted them, a few of them, just a few moments ago. And really, the key is messaging. And sometimes I think that gets lost out there. And maybe people feel like we're being preached to a little bit. And I was reading an article, actually, in the Irish Times, it was, I think, today, that we kind of need to bring people along with us with regards to this as well. And not maybe to treat people maybe like they're 4-year-olds or something. You know, you need to just bring them along with you.
Yeah, that's it. And I think, like, we really do need to think about this really positive future that we are creating, you know. So when we make choices, like when we choose to walk and cycle, that's really good for our health. When we choose to put solar up on a roof or to have solar in our community, that you're bringing energy but also money back into your community. When we look at our food and having community gardens, that you're kind of creating food sovereignty. But all of these have all the cool benefits of bringing the community together and talking to each other. And that, I think, is really what is exciting about this future that we are creating, that when we choose to walk to school or to go to the community garden, that we get to talk to each other. So we're also dealing with issues of isolation and issues of health and money and all of that as well. So Yeah, it's a really exciting time. There's great stuff happening and to stay positive.
Absolutely. Stay positive is the key. We'll bring in Dr. Kevin Lynch at this stage. Dr. Kevin Lynch, you're at the University of Galway and we will be discussing coastal resilience. I'm not too sure if you read that article yourself in the Irish Times this morning. It was just in regards to science and climate, and the point was, it was Shane Bergen that had the piece, and he was just saying creating a climate of trust between science, policy and the wider public will be essential if we are to survive the global challenges of climate change and biodiversity loss. Establishing that trustworthiness of the various experts we encounter can empower us to sort misinformation. Trust is a big thing here, and trusting the experts. And just the point I was making there just a few moments ago, really to bring people along with you is the key here.
Yeah, well, I'd probably take it a step further. I work a lot with communities, and I suppose some of the most successful things that we have seen on the coast in the last number of years come from the communities. And the trust is a two-way thing. So, you know, it's trust in the experts, maybe one thing, but also trust in that communities have the capacity and have the knowledge that for their local environments, because oftentimes these places where we have problems like coastal erosion and flooding, they're very specific local places, and local capacity and local knowledge and local expertise can feed into it as well. So I think, you know, we have a really good example down in the Maharees in County Kerry, where the local group have just driven everything, and every good thing that has come out of that area in the last number of years is because of the work of the local groups. And here in the Northwest, we're going to have a gathering later on in the summer of the community groups. And we have lots of them working really hard to save their local beaches, to manage them better, to look at these co-benefits that Laura's talking about, and acknowledge those as well, that it's not just all about looking at impacts, that we're actually looking to the future and a more resilient future for all the communities on the coast.
I know a project that you're familiar with, Kevin, is a community-led roadmap being developed to restore the dunes at Birchraw Beach and protect the inner Clew Bay area.
Yeah, and so we do get benefits from things like sand dunes, from coastal wetlands, where they protect us and offer us a buffer from coastal erosion and coastal flooding. And Birchraw is a really good example of that. It's a great big barrier to those coastal storms that come to Murrisk, which is the community there are the ones that initiated this work and the county council. But it also protects further in Westport, especially from those big coastal storms that we expect to increase in intensity. And then we also have that on the one hand. And then on the other hand, we have things like the drought now that's coming about. So when we get people around the table and talk about all the issues, then we can plan for these into the future and be strategic about it rather than reacting to things when they come along.
What do you say to the people listening, that, you know, in regards to extreme weather events? And people say, oh, we always had these extreme weather events. We had them in the 60s and the 70s, and there's no difference what we had back then. What do you say to those people listening this morning?
Well, you're right in that we've always had storms. And so oftentimes when we're talking to people about what we should do, they may be not convinced completely on climate change. We just talk about storms, and they say, oh yeah, we've always had storms and we've always had impacts on them. But the main difference between now and in the past is the landscape has changed, society has changed. So just going back to Birchraw, a simple one there is, you know, in the past when we had storms, we didn't have a car park there, and we didn't have a toilet block, and we didn't have infrastructure there. And now we have infrastructure at a lot of places on the coast where probably they're a bit too close to the coast, and we should maybe try and adjust into the future and bring those back a bit, so that they're not directly in harm's way.
Mm. Lots to be positive about. I know, as we mentioned at the outset there as well, and you know, that's a point that was made by Laura, that, you know, sometimes you get bogged down with a little bit of all the negativity and this, you know, with drought and what have you, and coastal erosion and World Ocean Days and that. But just, you highlighted there some of the positive aspects that are taking. And really, these positive moves that are being done are by local people just making a big difference. And they're small steps, but can make a huge difference.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of the biggest things that we can get from working with local communities is that idea that there are things of value there that we mightn't have valued in the past. And so we talk about, in an academic sense, ecosystem services and the things that nature give us for free. And coastal protection is one of those. But just the pure, the well-being and living in coastal areas is amazing. And when we first start working in Bertra, the local community, one of the first things they said was, look, the reason we live here is because we open the front door and we walk out into fresh air and we walk out into that view. And then you look at places like the baseball was cancelled in New York last night because of wildfires and the impact of air quality and things like that. We haven't appreciated those in the past, and I think we need to appreciate them into the future.
Yeah.
So again, you know, wildfires is something that we have locally, and in Galway there was a wildfire last night. There was one down in the Mataris at the weekend, or on just yesterday actually, and these are things that we have to appreciate, the air quality that we have, and factor those into our future planning and the benefits that we get from nature.
Certainly can't take it for granted. We'll, at this stage now, you mentioned about communities, and one community really the flag bearer when it comes to sustainability and biodiversity, you'd have to say, is Mulrani, and we're joined by Conan Kilcoyne here in studio this morning as well. Conan, thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks for having us, Michael. Cheers.
Talk to us about this decarbonising project for people that may not be familiar about it.
Yeah, so we put in an application a few years ago to try and convince Mayo County Council and various groups that we really wanted to tackle our energy consumption and to look at how we live our lives, you know. So we, one of the few things that we've done quite a few things. The Mulrani Environmental Group are kind of spearheading it. They're just a group of village people, so to speak, that are volunteers and are very passionate about the climate. We've put together a solar mehel, Laura very briefly mentioned it, where we've got 26 as of this morning, people that have expressed interest in having solar panels, photovoltaic cells on the roof to generate electricity. And we're trying to get a whip around, essentially, to get people to pool their money together because there's strength in numbers, yeah. And to try and get a better rate for each individual household. And our communities, our tourist office in Mulrani has photovoltaic cells on the roof, and it charges a big battery, which then charges the e-bikes. We've got a few community e-bikes which are accessible or are usable by anybody in the community, and it just gets people thinking and using something that has been charged by the sun. You know,
yeah.
Get on a bike and cycle to Achill. You know, you could be any age, and it will help you along, and you can. It's tactile, you know, it's you're physically getting feedback from cycling this bike that was charged by a few solar panels on a roof, you know, and the office as well is also fed by that battery.
It's incredible, but for something like this to work, you need buy-in from a number of people, and you've got, as you say, 26 now as of this morning.
Yeah, and it's education too, Michael Lee, you know what I mean? You have to try and educate people, and again, it's about being positive, you know, and showing people the benefits of having solar, and about, you know, the smart travel plan, getting people out.
Yeah,
walking and cycling and doing it safely, you know.
It's when you say it like that, and you know, as our previous speakers have been saying as well, it's when you really go to the nuts and bolts of it, and not to overcomplicate it. I think perhaps in the past maybe people were a little bit scared. They hear these buzzwords and it just maybe scares them a little bit, but when you say it like that about the work that's been done, about the positivity that's around it, of your e-bikes and what have you, and your solar panels, that it can have a huge positive impact and no negative, really.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and you can charge your EV down the line on it too, you know, you can have a complete closed loop. Yeah, we've got a website, Mulrani Community Futures. I'd recommend people to check it out and see what we're doing.
The gifts of hand, tell us about that. That was where leftover wool from the Foxford Woolen Mills is upcycled by local crafters and then sold to fund local community-led developments.
Exactly, circular economy. Yeah, it's a great organisation, and those women, they're very inspirational. I'd nearly get involved myself if I knew how to use some knitting needles, but yeah, they get these offcuts from Foxford woolen mills, and they're educating each other too, and it's a social outing.
Yeah,
and these ladies put together some amazing everything from pillowcases to garments, you know, that you can wear, and you know, they got me for €70. I went in, I saw this beautiful Celtic lace work pillowcase, and I was like, sure, that would work on my couch, you know, and I wasn't expecting to go in to buy anything. So yeah, they're doing great work, and there's a few Ukrainian women in there at the minute as well, and they're teaching each other how to you know, their different skill sets, and yeah, all the money goes back into
brilliant
into the community.
No, it's all positive. And you mentioned that there's a few months ago the smarter travel. It's also a key aspect of your project. You're aiming to reduce greenhouse emissions in the village by 51% by 2030. Do you feel
it's
ambitious, but a young course.
We're working towards it. And there's other things that we're looking at. Where like maybe if we have. It's again, it's about organisation, Michael D. You know, if we can get everybody talking and on, let's say a community, let's say a WhatsApp group.
Yes.
And we can have a look at what people might want in the hardware store in Castlebar, which is a 15-minute hour, even longer round trip. Maybe we could go and buy, 10 people's bits and pieces and hardware with one journey. You know, it comes down to organisation, and
it kind of comes back to the way Ireland was years ago as well, in terms of the Mehel and people looking out for each other, and that can play a big role in this as well. But also not to forget our young people. I mean, they are the future. Mulranny National School, I know, and also St Brendan's Village, they're key to this.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Speaking of St Brendan's Village, they've got a garden up in the on the Greenway, beside the Greenway. It's an incredible project. So all of the fruit and veg that they eat when in season in St Brendan's nursing home is grown in the village. And that's, I think it's a good start, and it gets people thinking about polytunnels. And it's interesting, you're cycling on the Greenway and there's these polytunnels, and they're full of tomatoes and they're full of potatoes, and it's pretty special.
Yeah, really is, from farm to fork, as I say.
And the kids, speaking of the kids in the national school, they were a green school, and it's amazing how much they know, about climate change and what you can do.
And overall, I mean, the village of Mulranny, in terms of its beauty and its natural majestic views, it's just a fantastic village. But what you're doing is really upping it and putting it up there, as I said at the outset, as the flag bearer for other villages around the region to follow.
And we're learning from other villages. Lewsburg are doing some great work with community forests. It's incredible. It's incredible. And we're not competing with anybody. We're all trying to help each other. I think that's a key thing. Yeah. It's very easy to look across the water and think, oh my God, look at what they're doing. Go on and talk to them. Communities should be talking to each other. We've got all of this technology today and we should be using it to our advantage,
We certainly should. We also, with us in studio, have Derek McLaughlin. And Derek, you're going to chat to us about the Wild Atlantic Nature Project. And many of our farmers will be familiar with this project. But for people out there who aren't overly familiar about it, just to give us some background to it all.
Perfect. And thanks for having me on, Michael D. Yes, the Wild Atlantic Nature Life Integrated Project is an EU-funded LIFE project. And LIFE is a funding stream that's essentially for member states of the EU to address some of the issues that we're discussing this morning, these kind of big challenges of meeting targets in 2030 and whatever. It's a very big project with about with 10 project partners in it, from the likes of National Parks and Wildlife Service, who are the actual coordinators, through Department of Agriculture, Cuilce, Chagask, and several others. The focus of the project is our blanket bogs and our protected blanket bogs throughout the west of Ireland and the northwest of Ireland. We cover an area pretty much from the Slievochtys and the Clare-Galway border right the way up to North Donegal. So it's an expansive area of predominantly upland areas, but all in between. And I suppose a big part of it, and we currently have the 840 farmers from Mayo, Sligo and Donegal in the programme itself. A big aspect of the project is, going back to something Kevin was talking about there, is what these areas deliver for us. And, we've looked at bogs in the past as being maybe wastelands or an area to plant or turf or whatever it might be. And we realise now that they do an awful lot more than just that. They become massive carbon stores. They, just to give you an example, for example, your intact peatland will take in about a tonne of carbon for every hectare per year. And a hectare is 100 metres by 100 metres square. So 5 hectares, 5 hectares of intact bog would be the equivalent of maybe 2 family cars per year. So it takes that in, and it takes that in forever. The bogs grow at a rate of about 1 millimetre a year. But heavily drained bogs will lose maybe 5 tonnes of carbon per year. But up until now, I suppose, particularly in the area of agriculture, and we hear bad news stories about emissions from agriculture and whatever, but we never hear what is being done and what the land already delivers for us. And you know, Kevin mentioned this kind of word, ecosystem services, but like what the environment does for us. And in the case of bogs, in the case of our peatlands and peat soils, they do phenomenal work for us from flood mitigation. You know, in a very heavily drained catchment, you get flooding, major flooding events, and issues with downstream towns and so on. Whereas when you've got a more intact catchment, you don't have those issues. The carbon, the intake of carbon is a massive thing with bogs as well. And again, that's an indefinite intake of carbon in those areas. Water quality is obviously a big thing, and biodiversity in these areas too. And up until now, I mean, farmers haven't been rewarded for what's already been delivered. You know, lands might be designated as an SAC, and it doesn't seem like there's any positive to that at all, but it's the most important lands within the EU. These are areas that there are rainforests as such. So the project itself has a focus on blanket bogs and adjacent areas as well. And the agricultural aspect is a core part of it, because obviously the farmer is the number one. They're like the first responder to our climate and biodiversity crisis. And as the guys were saying, that, you know, in the past, very much policy was created inside four walls rather than out on a hill. And that's very much the flavour of this project. As I say, we've had 840 farmers. We've paid out 2.4 million this year, actually, to those farmers. That relates to the quality of the ground. And when I talk about payments that relate to the quality of the ground, I'm talking about an approach of a results-based agri-environment programme. So, you know, rather than a kind of a flat rate for every single farmer, the farms are scored within this programme. We cover 65,000 hectares or so.
And how does the scoring work, Derek?
So it's simple, a simple scorecard where it's marked out of 10. The higher the ecological quality, the higher the score, and the higher the score, the higher the payment. It's okay. As simple as that. A very, very straightforward scorecard. How many of these plants are there? Is there invasive species like your rhododendron, or you know, if it's heavily drained or if it's not, and so on. And so the better the quality, the better the score, the better the score, the better the payment.
Certain areas fare better than others in this?
Oh, absolutely. No more than anything else. Like if you set us a task to, I don't know, make a sandwich or something like that, I'm sure you'd get some of the guys doing fantastic stuff there. And, you know, I might be very poor at it, but you're not going to pay the same money for different qualities. The whole idea there is that it distinguishes between quality. But what's the most important is there's many different reasons as to why something might be in good quality or bad quality, and very often relating to previous policies, you know, of incentivization of higher stocking levels maybe, or whatever. But what's really in core to this is the supports to be able to improve the quality on the ground. So that means that there are payments available for farmers to be able to restore or rehabilitate if they want to. So what it becomes almost like in the past, we've only rewarded food. We've only focused on food. But actually, you know, on a farm, you produce food, you produce, you know, carbon, you store carbon, you produce biodiversity, clean water, all of these things. And what this does is that creates a kind of a market for these ecosystem services that have been provided there as well.
Okay. With farmers, the buy-in to this, how positive? You mentioned the payments there. I was reading an article, I think it was last week or the week before, perhaps in the Farmers' Journal, with regards to the LIFE project, that I think it averaged around 3,100 last year for farmers. Was there any, I suppose, farmers a little bit sceptical about it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, with anything new, the farmers are sceptical. And rightfully so, you know, because like every CAP policy, there's new things to deal with. But I'd say farmers are probably the most adaptable of any section of society at all, of all, and remarkably, I suppose, innovative to that extent. We had an uptake of about 85% of all of the farmers in our target areas, which is excellent. With the results-based approach, I suppose one cut and lose there is that you're being evaluated on what's on the ground, and that reflects historical management of it. So it's not something that you had to do. Now, a lot of farmers have then, you know, sought to take out actions and so on, and we'll actually be be sending out, you know, or seeking expressions of interest for those farmers within our programme last year to, you know, apply for supporting actions or for these actions to improve the ecological quality there on the ground. And that's important. I will say one other thing there as well is that it has been a pilot in order to inform the new Acres Cooperation Project programme within the new CAP strategic plan. So it was, I suppose, a stepping stone so that we could develop pilot sites in, you know, North Mayo, as you know, in Glenamoy, your own neck of the woods, Docks Mountains, up into Donegal as well. So that there was a good sense of what this means, and you know, what the new Acres Cooperation Project approach meant for farmers on the ground.
I know as well, you've just sort of saying to Conan, the key to all of this is education of younger people, and you've been doing different projects as well, and collaboration with schools.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a very, very broad project. As I say, there is one of our partners is the Heritage Council, and only last Friday, Minister McConlogue, Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine, launched our Heritage in Schools programme, and that's that knits this idea of the scoring approach that farmers have been using and into the school programme. So these scorecards are a very good way to kind of just cast your eye over a hillside or a field or whatever and get an idea of the ecological value of that. And that's been knitted in with the Heritage in Schools programme. And that'll be available to schools. The resources are available to schools from September on a rollout basis. So that's very positive. We do have a lot of other projects going on as well. One really exciting one is where I mentioned where farmers want to improve their scores. Capacity is an issue, like who does the work and where's the labour and who's there to help on the hill and so on. And we've fund €1 million within Mayo and North Galway this coming year in a community-led approach to managing rhododendron, which is an invasive species and it's a big threat to peatlands and so on. So there's fabulous work going on with Forum Connemara and teams there. There's 10 people working on this out on the hills each day in the heater and all, and doing remarkable work. And that's the type of model where these opportunities for communities, we talk about nature restoration, we talk about all of this kind of stuff. When we get it right, it can be a massive, massive plus. It can be the factory that a lot of these areas always wanted, you know, where you've got locally led expertise, generally farmers in these areas that are working on these projects, well paid and really good opportunity.
Mm, well, you mentioned expertise, farmers, no one knows the land better than the farmers themselves.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I would say that, and I must say a big thanks to the farmers in our programme as well, because, you know, that's where we're getting our information. You know, we know the laws, we know the rules, and we know the regulatory aspects, and we know the funding streams and so on. But there is no better innovator in society than the farmer. You know, they adapt, they have to adapt. They adapt every 7 years to new policies that come down the line. And you know, they're collectively society's best allies.
Yeah. Laura, when you hear all of these different projects being discussed, what's happening in our communities and right across the region, I know we started off by saying, okay, we need to be positive here because there are always some negative aspects thrown out there. We heard in the news this morning about this and that and, you know, about the drought and World Oceans Day. But all these different projects that are happening, there's so much positivity. And from you and your role at Mayo County Council, that must give you great hope and optimism for the future.
Yeah, it does, absolutely. And we do, like, the targets have been mentioned, you know, so for example, in Mulrani, there is the plan, the decarbonising zone is that they will reduce their emissions by 51% by 2030, but that's also the target for all of Mayo. And then the big target is net zero by 2050. And when you talk about it like that, it is really overwhelming, but it's really exciting because there is great work happening. And I don't think, like, we can't see the results just yet, but I feel like it's kind of going to be like this landslide, just like the snowball is building slowly, but there is going to be massive change. And at least that's my hope. But, you know, I'd be talking to our councillors a lot, and it is overwhelming. But I was just saying to one the other day that I am really excited. I am positive that we can meet these changes. But it does mean everybody working together. And, you know, us in the local authority, we have to meet these targets as well. We have to look at our fleet. We have to look at our buildings. We have to look at our thermal. Everything we do, every strategy, plan, policy, every decision we make now, climate has to be part of that. but it also, we want to work with the public to allow them and to help them and enable them, I think, is the big thing, to also make decisions that are climate positive, I think is the way to phrase it, maybe.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Kevin, coastal resilience, as we've been hearing about, it's the big one here, really, you know, to keep, as they say, doing the good work that's going on, because coastal erosion is going to be inevitable, but it's how we deal with it.
Yeah, and exactly. And maybe just to pick up with on something Derek was saying about what the work that they're doing is all in preparation for rolling it out at a larger scale, mm-hmm. you know, and through the Acres programme. And there's a similar one going on, Life on Machair, where we're looking for, you know, pilot sites, and the Life on Machair team are working on pilot sites, and the learning from that on how we can improve things can be spread out then through the Acres programme. But just to pick up on something Conan said, you know, it's also about being inspired by other areas and learning from other areas. So when we were working on Bertrand, we were looking across the water to Mulroney. How did they do it? Okay, we'll take some of their ideas because they've tried them and they know what works. And then we look down to Kerry and we're connecting that as well. So it's this snowball effect where it's communities, it's the local authorities, it's all these experts, the farmers, the landowners, and bringing everybody together to come up with some sort of vision for the future where we're all more resilient to these climate impacts.
Yeah, learning all the time.
Yeah, it's terrible if we're all, you know, inventing the same wheel over and over again. We need to learn from each other. We need to learn from, you know, what mistakes are made. Experience is what you get when you don't get what you want, you know. And I have to go back to technology. I had a discussion with the lads over in Lewsburg, you know, recently about rhododendron panticum and how they tackle it, you know. And Peter Gill had his opinion and it seemed like a good plan. And then they got some information in Lewsburg from the Killarney National Park and it seemed like it was a handier way of doing it. And then we talked to Peter Gill and he was going to get us some Scots pines to put in the ways when we got the work done. And it's about getting the school involved and teaching them how to do it. And you know, the difference between planting an ash tree or an oak tree or, you know, a native species, you know, in terms of the biodiversity and the amount of the plethora of insects and birds and squirrels that live on a native tree compared to something that has come in that is naturalized, it's unbelievable. There might only be 5 or 6 different types of bug, for instance, on a tree that has been taken in from, you know, Japan, let's say, that grows here, that you can buy in a home center, in a garden center, you know. But an ash tree can support thousands of species, and it's incredible. And that's, again, it's inspiring.
Mm. And again, that's key. Education is key because many people wouldn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that is the key. And I'm sure, Derek, you'll agree with that as well. It's all about collaboration here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, completely agree with that. One thing I must mention as well is a programme that we've collaborated on with the Burren Bio Trust in County Clare that was trialled in the last 2 years, which is called the Hare's Corner. And just for your listeners, particularly in this in the Mayo region, that is open to those that are interested in taking part in the Hare's Corner. And the Hare's Corner is a small fund for farmers, for landowners, for community groups to take out some of these actions that we were talking about here. You don't necessarily need to be a herd owner or someone, but you can be as well. So we're looking at there's small groves of native trees, native orchards. We're looking at hedgerow connectivity and bog restoration as well as a what they call a plan for nature. So areas are lands that, you know, someone would like to know, what can I do with it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a really good opportunity to have, you know, an expert look at this, and there's a small fund there for that. And that's on the Burren Bio Trust website, that you'll see this Hare's Corner. As I say, it's open at the moment, and I'd encourage any of your listeners that might be interested in that to have a look, you know.
Yeah, another very fascinating concept. So, Laura, it's been great to kick off this opening segment of this project, Ours to Protect, with this discussion. And that, is, at the end of the day, is what it's all about. Get people talking about it. Get the ball rolling, educating everyone, educating ourselves, because as all our different speakers have been saying, we're all learning about it because it's an ever-evolving thing.
That's it. And we are on the mayo.ie website. We have a quite comprehensive climate action section, but it all also we continue to build on that. And we have, as we kind of discussed earlier, climate action signage, just to raise awareness of the various projects that communities, that individuals, that businesses, buildings have undertaken as well, so that you will see these climate action signs. You can scan the QR code and you can learn a little bit about that project, and you might get some ideas that you can take home to your home place or to take to your community or to take to your business. So yeah, hopefully now through the Hours to Protect, I know that there's kind of exciting discussions to be had with schools, with community groups, and hopefully with businesses, maybe with farmers and that as well. So I think there's an awful lot of learnings, and yeah, I am excited about the work that Midwest are doing on this as well.
Fantastic. Well, we're looking forward to, as we say, we'll have a segment every Friday now as well, around 10 to 10 about this. And it has been my pleasure to have you all in studio with us. Professor Kevin Lynch, University of Galway, Conan Kilcoyne from the Mulroney Decarbonising Project, Derek McLaughlin from the Wild Atlantic Nature Project, and Laura Dixon from Mayo County Council. Thank you all for joining us, and have a very good morning.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
Hours to Protect on Midwest Radio, funded by the Commission in Naman, with the television licence fee as part of the Sound and Vision Scheme.